Cal Brack, who is our guest here often, our friend, one of the major owners and manager of Channel 56, this Sunday represents 20 years on KDOC, Channel 56, and Cal called and wanted to commemorate it by giving us, he moved things around and said he wanted to give us an extra hour from 6 to 7 to commemorate 20 years on KDOC. Lots of good news. So tonight, I'll, dead or alive, be live in presence at 6 p.m. That means we'll have 5 hours on Channel 56 tonight. I don't think I'll do an afternoon festival, and I'd like a lot of you people that normally go in the afternoon to get out of the rut and be voices of faith tonight. Some part of or all of 6 to 11 on Channel 56 tonight. And of course, the rest of the network benefits. That means we'll come on live at 9 p.m. on the East Coast. And respectively, earlier back toward the West Coast. Next week, we return to Nashville. We go on WUXP Channel 30 in Nashville, Tennessee. 7:30 their time, but that's 5:30 our time, which means it's the same time as Channel 4 in San Francisco. The same program will be playing off the network, but that means I need some more of you to get up at 5:30 next Sunday and give me more voices of faith, or we won't have enough to handle the calls. And you have to be alert and distinguish between whether they're calling from San Francisco or whether they're calling from Nashville. Now, voices of faith, I'd like to be able to count on you to take this seriously. Years ago, we were in Nashville, had a wonderful response. And we're returning on Channel 30. I think that's sort of interesting. Channel 30 in Nashville, 5:30 California time, but it's 7:30 Sunday morning in Nashville. And next Sunday is 4th of July weekend. This is the 20th anniversary on KDOC. Next Sunday is the 4th of July. And I've forgotten what anniversary that is for going on satellite, but it's very close to the same number of years, and it's a special day that we commemorate when the devil thought he had silenced this voice, and we reached out, asked the congregation to double portion, because to take the step would double our... In fact, the expenses of going on satellite and that step of faith monthly equaled the monthly budget in those days. So we asked the people to double portion for 3 months. They did. And the rest is history. And everything that we do is dependent upon the satellite now. And any one of you whose lives have been affected and changed by the teaching, you owe a debt of gratitude to those who sacrificed and double portioned that July month and August and September so many years ago. Since then, every July we've designated double portion month. So like a relay, you can launch the ministry forward. We've added so much this past year, and I see nothing but further expansions and victories in the months and years ahead. I shouldn't have to talk much about it. You regulars know this is the way you say thank you. in gratitude for the satellite and what those who sacrificed did almost 20 years ago. Do you know, Craig? 20 years ago, so the anniversary is the same. Today, we celebrate 20 years on KDOC. Next Sunday, we celebrate 20 years on satellite. Probably a record. Probably a record, certainly a record for one voice, just one voice, going round the world by satellite. And next Sunday starts our double portion month. You that are old timers, you should be habituated to that. And now it's offering time. You know, when we were 24 hours a day, on Channel 30. And I hope you understand I should let them in if they're late.
Yes, sir.
But get them in here quickly.
Yes, sir.
And I want some of you to buy a clock. I'm about to close the gates at 11. You presume on me every time that I get kind and merciful. This service starts at 11 o'clock. You get to work on time. You get to God's house on time. So don't count on me letting you in just because I've been doing it. Now let them in today. Get them in a hurry. But there's never been a more apt phrase. I suggest you wake up next Sunday. Let me repeat that. I suggest you wake up next Sunday. I get here on time. I drive in the traffic. I'm being kind. I've been here often enough. Give you a little inch and you'll become a ruler. I used to pastor right on television. That's what I did. I wish I didn't have to do things on live television. I wish I could somehow zap all of you members that need some straight talk from the pastor. And Star Wars style, zap you into some padded cell where I could talk to you with the world listening in. I had to dismiss another person last night. An old guard. I had to bench some people today. Love them like family. I think they love me. But they love me like an old marriage where the wife says, well, you know how your dad is. Or an old marriage where the husband says, well, you know how she is. I love her, but it's like I frankly wanted to puke when I read some of the write-ups about the retiring councilman, Nate Holden. While these snide newspaper people, in essence, told us, well, you know how he is. He's like a lovable old uncle. You can't hate him, but he's... In other words, the baggage of years is just wadded up and carried forward, and you must carry the image of not really too mentally astute people that they formed years ago. And because they stopped growing, they don't think you will grow. The reason a lot of marriages go on the rocks is the wife stays in the house with the kids, and the challenges of life make the husband get out there and grow. If he doesn't, he's going to end up a janitor. And she doesn't grow with him. And vice versa. Now, I'm telling you as a congregation, I've been here and been down this trail over and over. I'm not even sure I'm going to preach today because I'm going to address some problems. If you haven't figured out over the last few months that you are going to line up behind the pastor with enthusiasm or you're going out of here, you're really a stupid person. And you knew people who came because you heard me teach. That's why this ministry exists, for my teaching. But I remember getting angry in college when I read a book in sociology that most people go to church for social reasons, not for religious reasons. And I got very angry. I was a teenager and I knew that in my dad's church, that wasn't the case because he was, at the time I was understanding, had just become the new pastor of the church that he had been converted in many years earlier, and he'd served two after evangelistic work, traveling, then he pastored two churches in the same county, but two different cities, and then was called to his old home church. And I got very mad, but I've learned over the years that study was pretty accurate. And people in this church, new and old, better understand. This church exists only where I can see your eyeballs. People in this church had better understand one reason for this church: the teaching that goes out around the world.
Yes, sir.
That's the only reason. Thank you, but I'm not done. It is not your church. And then I wised up. I suddenly saw my dad's ministry begin to be crippled by the people who loved him, who knew old Ted. There was one, see, Dad was converted in that church. He was just a member of the church. He felt a call to the ministry, but didn't think he was qualified, not enough education. Dad never finished high school. My mother was pulled out of elementary school and made to go to work by a tough old granddad of mine. They always felt inadequate. And you've heard Dad tell his testimony. I'm sure it played in the Father's Day series. He was stricken with rheumatic fever in 1936. 6'2", 180 pounds, went down to 120, into a coma. Counted by the doctors as no hopes. We were in the room the last night they expected him to live. When Dad, I still remember this, sat up in bed, pointed his finger at my mother and said, "Inez, I'll be preaching in 6 weeks." I don't even try to tell the testimony of his vision and healing, a part of which he saw himself walking up a narrow path with the Bible under his arm and says, "God, there I go, I'm well. What's this mean?" And in the vision, God said, "Preach my word, I'll heal you." And at 87, he looked pretty healed. The last Sunday he was here. But during those trying days, when Dad was, before he went into the coma, there were three or four old families in the church. Wonderful people. They loved Dad. One of the wives was the chairman, was the treasurer. The other one was a board member in the church, a deacon with Dad, when Dad was a deacon there too. They came, they brought food, they carried Dad around. I still remember, I can use his first name, I remember Woody carried my dad around. His sickness crippled him first in the legs before it went through the rest of his body and he went into the coma. How could Dad not love Woody? I could reel off the names. Earl, Russell, John. And as I got my face straightened out and began to help my dad as his assistant, I had to do what he couldn't do. These old friends of his had their independent ministries, and they were doing it for God and doing it for Dad, except they left my dad out of the loop. And he was crippled. He couldn't find anybody else that would come and take their place because they wouldn't move. They enjoyed their positions. They just got the job done. And they thought they were working for the Lord. They thought they were helping Dad. No, they weren't. They were doing what they wanted to do. They were self-employed for Jesus. They were, look, Daddy, what we're doing for you. Now, it's painful to go through life with the gift of a discerning spirit. There are times I wish God had not given me that discerning ability because it makes life painful. You see through BS. Oh, the church was moving along fine. Everybody was doing what to do for God. And I remember I took a group of young people and started doing some dirty work. Now, Woody was there. He led song service like a pig's tail. He corkscrew. But he had always led the singing, and he was always there, and he was reliable, and you didn't even have to think about the song service because Woody would be there. You didn't have to do anything about it.
The rest of the birthright, that all the rest of the promises contained in the birthright, he shifted to the sons of Joseph and gave them to
Woody led the singing. And people with leadership ability take charge. That's the way life is. You go to a schoolyard. There's some who take charge.
God fulfills every jot and tittle of His Word.
Still want to rule by, manipulating the guy that is in charge. Because usually these are in grammar school and elementary school. If you've got the biggest muscles, you're in charge. And if your brain's all muscle and not much gray matter, you need a little manipulator to tell you what to do. Churches are no different. I cleaned the house. Dad didn't have the guts to do it. I understood it. How do you look a guy in the eye and say to him, Woody, you're no longer with me. If a tank came down the street and going to run over Dad, Woody would jump in front of the tank. But he no longer, if he ever did, wanted to make sure he was doing what Dad wanted and was reporting to Dad. Because he had adopted, you know, it's wonderful, my old friend's been elevated, but a prophet's not without honor save in his own country. And of all the people that disrespected Jesus who loved him, was his family. They thought he was beside himself. I've told you the story of Von Bowman, and I prayed before I became pastor here. I dreaded becoming a pastor because I knew that day would come. Von Bowman, more than any pastor I ever met, I respected, apart from my dad, and he influenced me. Brightmoor Tabernacle, Detroit, Michigan. I was there every year as a teaching mission. Bond began when he was 19. To use his words, which I've shared with this congregation before, he said, we had 35 people. I was 19. The 35 people, you'd sing the doxology, they'd climb the walls. He built it to a church between 1,000 and 1,500. When I was there, I'd have 1,000 out on Wednesday night in a teaching session. Multi-million-dollar complex, paid for. He called me in, crying one day, and said, Gene, I prayed for 4 years. You're the only man that I have on my heart. I feel God laying on my heart to succeed me. We're ready to launch a new ministry. The building's paid for. It was the beginning of TV. The Motor City affects the world. And he says, I can't move forward. And he named the people. Some of them went back to when he was 19 in the church. They've stood with me through thick and thin. Any battle, they're there. But they've settled, and he used the biblical phrase, settled on their lease. I can't make any new moves because they're in the way. They won't shake themselves out of their routine state of mind. And I can't get anybody else without moving them. And I don't have the heart to move them. They still called him Bond. Now, I don't want to bore you today with, on my doctorate with Professor Cowley, I developed the taxonomy that analyzes social institutions. I spent a year preaching on it here in this church. The controlling forces that take over as an institution grows and ages. He said, Gene, I fought too many battles. I love them, they love me, but it's time to move on. I am at the heart to move them aside. Just like my dad's church. They had grown up. It's like I can probably look around this congregation and try to avoid looking at a person who thought it was the greatest honor on earth for him to just be on camera one when I was doing a live festival. There grew to responsibilities where it was beneath him to just be a cameraman. Vaughn said, Gene, you can come with a new broom and sweep clean. You don't have these emotional ties. And we are crippled because some are, I'm going to use my words, he used different words, are maxed out. They're comfortable. They think they're needed. They think they're doing it just for the Lord. But they've long since quit trembling. You may not believe it, but I tremble before I come on this platform. I know the responsibility of communicating God's word right. You don't need, I don't need that, you don't need a comfort zone when you're working for God. The church was crippled with comfort zone ease. Locked in their position, deluding themselves into, well, he needs me. Paradoxically, I need a lot of people as long as those people don't feel they're needed. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Indispensability. Entitlement. This is my position. I'm doing it for God. Now, I announced months and months ago that I was going to land on this cathedral. How many of you heard me? That little kingdoms had been built down here. People knew more than I knew about this building. People didn't tell me anything. Well, we're here, we know, so why should he have to know? People that were locked into their volunteer position of determining who had the passes and who didn't and letting them in. Ushers that always stood in the same place. Or it's like church members who always sit in the same seat until they think that they're entitled to that seat. One of these days I'm going to have a cathedral march and we're just going to spend the whole 2 hours going around in a circle until you end up in a different seat. You better understand. It's like the tithe. You haven't given a dime to God when you pay tithe, and you're a criminal and a gutsy one at that because you're robbing from God. You give to Him what is His. And you're lucky he lets you keep the balance and promises to bless it. You give the tithe to the storehouse where you eat your food. You're disobeying God if you send it anywhere else. If you go to another church and they feed you, then you do some math. You listen to me 6 hours and then 1 hour, I want 6/7 of your tithe. Because that's where it belongs. You pay where you eat. You don't go to some little McDonald's and pay your full feed bill all week long and then expect to eat free at all the other restaurants in town. But that's another subject. I'm talking about complacency, entitlement to position. I've been sending broad hints to everybody. I've been saying a new day has arrived. I didn't finish with Bond Bowman. I said, Bond, you prayed 4 months. I prayed 4 minutes. I'll come for 4 months. Fill in for you, give you a break, and see what God will tell me. It wasn't time for me to pastor. Marvelous opportunity to count facilities and congregation and strength and structure, and finance. God said no. But I did this. Bond was so convinced that I was his successor that he totally turned loose for 4 months. And when he came back and I said no, he had the strength and the perspective to do the job, and he had 10 more years of his greatest ministry as he did what he had to do. I did it in my dad's church. I helped Bond see he had to do it. I did it as a consulting pastor in churches across the land. And I did it when I came here. I came to a church, the congregation didn't even know they owed the money. And a bunch of fat cat entitlement people sitting in their positions with no more vision for God and no more faith, than a squirrel. And I cleaned house. Of the 104 who voted me in, there may be 3 in this congregation. A deacon board, a fat cat, worthless bunch of associate and assistant pastors. Now, I inspired some young people as interns. They almost got ruined by the associate pastors who decided they'd make them their servants. And some of those interns have become mature and solid parts of this congregation. But I'm sorry, and there are no exceptions. I want the attitude back that brought them here. Or they're out. And this congregation had better understand, like a slow-moving tornado, I hit. I sort of dive in here, dive in there. And when I get done, everything's whirled away, and we have to rebuild. All the people that were here in this cathedral over the last 5 years, 10 years, I'm sure some of them who will not get back even inside this church until an unqualified, I'm 100% to blame, I'm as guilty as sin, and thank you, sir, for discerning it and putting me in my place, and none of this, I know I did this wrong, but I will not tolerate any buts, any excuses or any explanations. I gave broad hints to this congregation, I am going to land on this kingdom down here, where people have been doing what's right in their own eyes for too many years, and that's a broad enough hint to anybody other than the moronic squirrel. You better be knocking on my door, standing at my gate, ringing every phone and coming and saying, sir, how do I disclose to you everything so I can let you know I'm on your side? Oh, he needs me. Well, up your yin-yang with a boxcar sideways. Yeah, I need you. If your arm offends you, cut it off. I prayed the day would not come that I would have to do what von Bowman dreaded, but it arrived about 7 years ago. And it's been a very painful process. It's like cutting members of your own family. You see, you don't build any chits with God that were gained by past performance that you can spend in tomorrow's faith walk. And let me say that very carefully, because that's what's the matter with this congregation. Yesterday's sacrifices, yesterday's effort, yesterday's loyalties, yesterday's being there in a pinch, yesterday's faithfulness, doesn't buy you one scintilla of bargaining power with God today. Every day is a new day. And every day, like F.B. Meyer says, all your past dyings are just steps you've climbed And if you climb 75 stairs and you stand at a height where you can see some new self in you that needs to die, those 75 stairs won't lift you to the next one. You've got to do it. This is war. And yesterday's risks on the march to Baghdad will not keep you alive in Baghdad today, because you made that desert drive. Evil people are out to get you today, and you better stay as alert as you did when you came up the desert trail. That's what I'm saying about this church. The effort of the past does not entitle you to coast today. Let me say that again slowly. The effort of the past does not entitle you to coast today. I bike ride. I get a little coasting time. But eventually, the next hill, I got to pedal. And some of you quit pedaling. And I'm frankly tired of dragging you. I want some new blood. Are you willing, you may say, to do what you did when you came here, empty this church and start over? Try me. It would have been hard 7 years ago. These 7 years for me to gain the knowledge and to be gifted by God with a wife with administrative ability. Nobody now can cripple us. I want you to know that. I can cut anybody that is here, cut them out. I can cut you out because the majority of the income comes from outside the state. So I can even eliminate you and pay the bills of this church. Now, 80, I think that's too little. Maybe 90% of the old guard people that were here that I've had to terminate in the last 5 years, they could all still be here if they'd quit making excuses and quit explaining and quit defending. Take their lumps. I think I've said this publicly for years. If you're going to work with me, you turn your 2% into 100%. You ever heard that?
Yes, sir.
I am so tired of defense. It's as old as our sinning parents. The serpent caused me to do it. Yes, I disobeyed. I mean, what's complicated about don't touch the tree? Huh? Tell me, what's complicated about don't eat the fruit of that tree? Anything?
No, sir.
Respond to me.
No, sir.
What's complicated? You eat of it, you're going to die. That's motivation. She eats of it. And I did it, but the serpent. You didn't have to let the serpent in here, God. Adam, I did it. Well, let me tell you why. It's the woman you gave me. You're to blame, God. I was till midnight last night on Saturday night with compromised new staff people by old staff people. with a security problem at King's House 1 of a light that's been on for 6 weeks. And everybody knew about it, but nobody would tell anybody, and the fingerprints were spread wide enough that nobody could discipline the people over it except me. And then I'm at midnight still trying to referee an argument. Well, he said, no, she said. I told her, no, he didn't tell me, that's a lie. Where's the excuse come from? Both parties were security people who should have known the light was on. That's the spirit of the issue. I'm to blame. I didn't do my job. But I want to shift some of the blame. This generation that cannot recognize your evil self that Christ had to die for. Is there anything anybody's ever heard any different from me? Don't give me explanations. Explanations are an excuse. The correction is over. In 30 seconds, you take your lumps, turn your 2% into 100%. I won't do it again. Don't give me an explanation. I don't remember. If you ever go to a deposition in a court case, your attorney is going to tell you to say, I don't remember. That is the incontestable answer. You can't be gotten for perjury for that. Somebody better quit making this a slick or I'm going to be right in your lap. I'm just telling you, there are no independent ministries in this church. You tend the bookstore for me. You are ushering for me. Don't even think about writing in, I want God's will for my life. And I learned this from my mother. She had a kid from Oral Roberts University come out. She asked him where he was when there's some work being done, needed to be done. The wastebaskets weren't emptied. And my mother said, where were you? Well, I was praying in the back, seeking the will of the Lord for today. She said, the will of the Lord for you today is what comes out of my mouth. Now, she didn't have my style of being able to colorfully tell him what to do, but you empty that wastebasket, and you get your praying done before you get here. This is not some pseudo-spiritual church. It's an honest church, and most people do not deserve honesty in today's world. I came to town, clearly articulated the purpose, looking for uncommon people, returning this church to faith and respect for God-ordained leadership. And I remember the Sunday when I said to the congregation, I've been on trial, the last minute I'll be on trial. I got up to take an offering, and God led me into Joshua. And after putting up with that band for 40 years in the wilderness that he couldn't do enough for, that they didn't criticize him again at the next turn in the road. He made them camp at Jordan's River flood time. He didn't part the waters for them and tell them to stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. He made them put their foot on the water at flood time until their feet touched the water before he parted it. And he made the leaders stay in the middle while the wall was up there and build a monument there and take one out and build it on the shore and take and go back and forth until everybody was across. And then between the Jordan River and the city and the enemies that others had fled from, he crippled them. At Gilgal, which means peeling back, as he circumcised them because of their disobedience through the wilderness, none of them had been circumcised. And grown men, that isn't a pleasant trip. So here they are, crippled, and their vital parts. No double entendre, exposed in that bare desert area, with the enemies of this land in front of them. And then he told Joshua what they were going to do. And Joshua did not tell the people. All he told them was what they were doing. He didn't tell them what would happen. March around Jericho. March and keep your mouth shut. Don't say a word to me, to God, or to your neighbor. Don't say a word. Until I tell you to shout. Now, 3.5 million people, progenies of that rebellious band in the desert, told to shut their mouth and march. 6 days. And then the seventh day, go around that city 7 times and still don't say a word. That's a Sabbath. By then, they're tired. They've watched the same rump waddle in front of them around that city for 6 days. I can hear somebody criticizing, this is a Sabbath. Go around 7 times. And I said that Sunday, I could see God leaning over saying, I want to hear one critical whisper out of the mouth of this bunch. And if he had heard one critical, judgmental, substituting their view for the leader's view, he would have wiped them out in a stroke and started over with Joshua. And I said, this congregation will not keep me on trial anymore. You're on trial. Now the problem is, this congregation of the old guard is peopled with people who were there, and they passed the test. But you somehow think you graduated. You remind me of once saved, always saved, Hard Shell Baptist. You remind me of the Second Definite Work of Grace people, of the Nazarenes, that they've been sanctified. You remind me of the Pentecostals because they had an experience of speaking in tongues. They're there. They're okay. Let us go on unto completion. There are those of you that come to this cathedral of the old guard and you don't participate in anything else. You've done your little duty to God by sitting your butt down here and paying your tithe, which is not yours to give. It's God's anyway. And you don't have any more responsibility. The pastor can be dying. You won't find out about it. And like a bunch of babies that I must hold the bottle for, you won't go to festival and be a voice of faith where the trenches and the battles are won, where the life of the 24-hour network is either flowing or bleeding. I know how people begin in this church as king's houses. I, frankly, am not interested in a seat-warming congregation that comes to this beautiful cathedral. I'm beautiful. And listen to me teach, and I know what I put out because I know the hours I put into getting it ready to put out. You can sit home and listen. I have little respect for anybody in this congregation. In fact, I have no respect for anybody in this congregation. But think that you can be a part of this ministry and never ever offer to be a voice of faith. It's a war, folks. And let me tell you, I'm going to win it. Because I'm going to eliminate those that don't get on my side, no matter what the pain to you or me. I'm bleeding today. My wife will tell you, I bled emotionally through the night, bled this morning, she told me. Didn't have to do it, put it off. Let her handle it. Not my style. Enough already. Too many people in this congregation think you've got me figured out. Oh, he's the world's best teacher. But he's difficult to work with. Oh, he's the world's best teacher. I am your pastor, or I'm not your pastor. And if I'm not your pastor, then get the hell out of here. And that was not cussing. God is the sender on two sides, and some of you need a fresh dose of humility, and you need to come running to the pastor and saying, where and how can I help for your benefit instead of what I want to strut around and do? Some of you think you own certain seats up here. Well, some toilets need to be cleaned at the studio. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Some painting needed to be done. When have you last called and said, Pastor, I don't know what I can do? I can see that you'd like to have some help. I got old guard people here for years. How come there's a line of people out here now to say good morning, Pastor, when I drive in? It obviously wasn't that hard to accomplish. Because the hard, cold truth is, I had some old time, loved as sons, and they thought they loved me as fathers. They didn't care enough to make sure that I drove in here with workers that looked like they were excited to see me and excited to do what they were doing. I want some cheerleaders. I want some people that smile under pressure. And I want some of you sad sacks that are dying for Jesus and have worked your ass off for me too long to just get out of my sight. You understand that?
Yes, sir.
How many of you want to get up and walk out right now? That'll make the job much easier. Because whichever little kingdom you're a part of, I'm coming your way. Those that I had to bench today, just like I gave the hint to the cathedral, I gave a direct order. There are no independent ministries in this church. Those persons had, we gave them my wife's number, the one number that nobody else answers but me or her. I want a report. Don't even think about coming into this church and developing a ministry of your own. That's the way they build them down in Orange County. Of course, numbers are all that matter. No, character matters. I expected a report. There are no independent ministries here. You see people that used to be very active. They aren't here anymore, are they? I had a man running the ushers back there. I had to bench him to find that he had developed some usher's instruction manual, which he had done. When I asked, where'd you get, well, I deduced these things from your ministry that I've listened to for these years. How come I didn't get to see it and check it and say, approved? You know, I don't think I ever told you this. You know that the homepage for Dr. Gene Scott was in existence for 2 or 3 months with a couple of computer nerd geniuses that had nominated themselves that they could speak for me, ministering in my name, and not a single thing they put on that web page did they bring by me for approval. That isn't the way it is now. And different people are doing it. Remember my dad's church. They never forgot that Dad was a deacon, and they were buddies, and they were peers. I want to tell you something. I come in your home, you, in your area, especially in work, you're superior to me in endless ways. But there are no peer levels in this church or any other church that God establishes. I don't ever remember a shepherd partnering with a sheep except a pervert. I'm the shepherd, accountable to the chief shepherd. And though the weight of society opposes this to the end, you will respect the office of the pastor in this church, or I'll throw you out. It grieves me greatly. I'm greatly pained, though I gave permission, even going to look his way, to see one person. Still too proud that I've let come here to get on his knees figuratively and say, God be merciful to me because I dared to pass judgment on the pastor. Only my love lets him be exposed again. He's still lacking the unqualified apology. And without looking his way, I seriously doubt he can ever get right with God until he understands he touched with his mouth and his pen God's anointed. And he's in no position to consider himself a peer to David. God hasn't sent a prophet with an anointing horn and anointed him. And he's in no position to claim that God has anointed him. You pass judgment on the pastor. That he's sitting here is a measure of my mercy. And I'm watching him very closely. You don't have entitlement to sit here anywhere. And as I said to a person this morning as I benched him, it's not enough that you don't do anything wrong. You're still a sinner if you don't do right what you should do. I been saying this for some time. There are too many people sitting in this congregation that didn't make it in their commitment. I have no sympathy for whatever their excuse making may be. In some past times, some of them had some real valid gripes of things that were being done without me knowing it by some of the old guard who would speak in my name. And I could never get people to say, well, now, did Doc tell you to tell me that today? I don't mean, did he tell you last week to tell me today? I mean, this day, did you speak to him today and did he tell you to tell me that? And some of the old guard members that are gone would lie and say yes. But you then ask, what time did you talk to him today? No, Doc must know, so I assume he's approving it. I'm easy to figure out if you want to face the truth. I don't care what your excuses. You've been treated unjustly? Look to Jesus. He died for your sins. He's the audience listening in while you do your ass-covering BS speeches. Well, I don't like to be treated unfairly. I mean, I may have broken into your house, raped your wife, and sodomized your children, but you will not accuse me of coming through that window. I went through this window. Oh, how they will grab that one little thing that might be the spirit of what's said is true, but that one little thing got a little measure of accuracy because you know something that the discipliner doesn't know. And now I will divert into that. Yeah, I did the other things, but I'm sick of it. Christ did none of the things he died for. You did them. I'm sick of this fairness syndrome. There wasn't anything fair about what happened to Jesus. He did it for you. And he, God, gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. You got one choice if you don't like your pastor. Get your ass out and keep your mouth shut. Go find a pastor you like. One that'll lick your rear end for you. David was anointed, but he would not touch God's anointed. And Saul was evil. I'm not Saul. You are in danger of what they call old-fashioned hellfire if you've allowed yourself to come in this church. It reminds me of these fools that criticize my cigar. They can't find a verse of scripture for it. But I can't get past the cigar, they say. Oh, I get sick of this. I mean, the world's best teacher. I don't think I am, but I've heard this direct quotes. The world's best teacher. But I can't get past that cigar. Well, where do you think the teaching comes from, folks? You think I got it out of Stanford? Stanford gave me the disciplinary skills. And I owe it to God to give it my best all week. But you've got to be totally dead in the Spirit if you can't figure out. I'm not reading some programmed speech when I come here. The Holy Spirit and the other voice takes over. And apparently God can get through the cigar smoke and get out of the cigar smoke to get the message to you. What I'm saying is, it's none of your frickin' business about my cigar. Keep your mouth shut and march. I don't pry into your personal life. I don't try to convert you. I teach. You do what you want with it. But if you're going to come to these facilities and put on the air that you're here to support this ministry, then damn it, support this ministry and keep your negative mouth shut. This also, could I find out, and I've got a lot of mercy, and I feel and read spirits. I don't want any qualified followers. I don't want any conditional, yes, but. This is war. You're going to follow me as I follow Christ. There are only two people in the Christian world, two kinds of people. And go tell me what Bible you're reading, because I can find the manuscripts. Paul divided the whole church world when he said, follow me as I follow Christ. I follow Christ people, point people. God calls them out, and they get their orders from Him. And they take the responsibility. Authority is right and capacity to author. Responsibility is right and capacity to respond. Everybody wants to move in on somebody else's territory, be the expert, and author things that they don't take responsibility for. I am responsible to God, not you, for what's done in this church. And how dare you come in here with your subjective ideas and come up with some little plan and slink around and, oh, I'm doing this for Doc and doing it for the ministry, and you never report to me. So quit lying to yourself and lying to God. There's only two kinds of people. Those that get out on point. I follow Christ. And those that must follow the I follow Christ ones. Now, unless God has tapped you on the shoulder and destined you and chosen you, and when He does, He'll force you out to be a domitah. God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for Telios, translated perfecting, it's completing, bringing to completion the saints. You're a saint when you give yourself to God. You're a saint being completed when you submit yourself under the authority of a domitah. And I'm not concerned that the devil is trying to destroy in this generation any hopes of a carnal world respecting religious authority because of the carnal crooks. What's new? The devil has always tried to move into God's territory. There was a demon-possessed man in the synagogue when Jesus went there. God doesn't change His plan. You want to go start a church? You want my position? I'll ordain you. It's an initiation act, not a graduation act. I'll ordain you. Go out there and start a church. If you want to do it God's way, you'll do it my way. Because I'm doing it God's way. He put me in charge. I am to stay in charge. And through the years and the wars and the battles, some people opted to certain positions, and they will only participate if they can do what they have chosen as their position to do. Let me tell you something. If I see you doing a certain thing in this church, and that's all you ever show up to do, You don't show up as a voice of faith. You don't show up when I call for volunteers to do some dirty work. This is your contribution to the ministry. You're going to be discontributed. You understand?
Yes, sir.
I intend to dim this in until I'm sure you understand. I won't have to do it. Don't have to waste another Sunday doing this. You understand?
Yes, sir.
You don't pick your ministries here. You don't come here like the boy that worked for my mom and asked the Lord to give you the position that is His will. You have one choice if you're one of the follow me people, the ones that are to follow. You have to figure out who can you follow that is truly able to say, follow me as I follow Christ. And that's why nobody that's been here the last 29 years can say Gene Scott has stood still. Nobody can say that I've slacked off and started coasting. I'm still following Christ. In new tests of faith every year. I'm sorry you are guilty, some of you. You came here, you followed me as I followed Christ, you put God first, and God blessed you, and then you've settled in your territory. God doesn't ask much. He owns your tithe, and He wants 10% of your time. Not designated giving. And not designated time. I'm yours, Pastor. I'll do whatever you want me to do. I've been sitting in an executive chair and my butt's getting too fat. I need some hard work. Tell me what you want me to do. Is any of this making sense? I don't care whether you agree or not. I hope I see some faces that don't agree so I can throw you out. I'm sending out a full bore warning. There's not very many left of the old guard. I can count them on one hand. You're going to go too. And some of you in this congregation that didn't make it with me, that have excused and rationalized your failure for whatever cockamamie excuse you give yourself, you are an open scab in this congregation until I hear from you. Unqualified, it was your failure. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of faith, you ought to fall on your face in tears of acrimony against yourself. You didn't put your body where your mouth was. Period. Woman, I suffered this wretched. Period. And you have no right or place in this congregation until you face your failure. Does that mean you have to come back to work? No, I don't want you. You're going to keep coming to this church. You're going to volunteer one day a week to do whatever I tell you to do. I just want you for your own soul's salvation to quit covering your sins. And quit excusing your failure. Because whatever excuse you may give, you haven't yet resisted under blood. And you haven't suffered for Christ's sake the way He suffered for your sake. And if you didn't come here to suffer for His sake, under my direction, you came here with the wrong reason. That's what the problem is with a lot of you. You came for the wrong reason. Now, do I have to say this to you again?
No, sir.
A new day has dawned. I'd like you all to just get your vision back and understand, regardless of your hopes, I'll outlive most of you. And this church is not going to change, and it will never become your church. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir.
Good. I'm not too happy that I had to use the service. I spent at least somewhere between 40 and 50 hours preparing just for today's message. And to do this is an act of love. Before I just start screening everybody in this congregation, eliminating those that aren't with the right attitude. You better respect your pastor's power of discernment. I don't fool easily. What appears like fool, no, is what I preached in Romans. Through me, or any minister that God has called that you should follow as they follow Christ. They have the same heart God has because they have His heart in them. If you have the Spirit, you have the mind of Christ. God looks like a fool. Oh, Ephraim, how can I forsake you forever? Jesus weeping over Jerusalem. How oft I would have gathered you. This is not a way to win friends and influence people. Not a way to pack in congregations by giving them what they want. As long as you sit in this church and name me pastor, I will stand at the judgment seat of Christ responsible for your soul. Say, where do you get that? 13 chapters of Hebrews. The better way under Christ concludes with three things, including that's where we get the assurance Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. But it concludes with three admonitions, one of which is obey those that have rule over you. I've taught you the meaning of obey. It's run to the voice of the sayer, not dodging behind doors and hiding your activity. Run to the voice of the sayer. Obey those that have rule over you, not policemen and governors and mayors and councilmen. They don't watch for your soul. These are the domitas, the pastors. The gift ministries to the church to perfect the saints. Obey those that have rule over you, for they watch for your souls. I don't think there are that many. I don't think there are that many in today's ministerial ranks with all the corruption we keep reading about. To genuinely watch for your souls. Well, if you don't sense that, get out of that church. And if your spirit doesn't bear witness with what I'm trying to accomplish today, you should get out of this church. Your ways are not God's ways. And some of you are as guilty as the Ephesian church. You've lost your first love. And you need to repent and do your first works over. Because this service flows out of the same heart that said, as I preached it in Romans, my goodness and my long suffering and my postponement of judgment and my endurance and my kindness was to get metanoia, a change in you, but instead it hardens you because you are metanoia. Better look in your spirit and decide which side you're on. Too late to preach a sermon? Don't even want to try. Once a year is more than I want to have to do this. And to you that are strangers that came today expecting to be taught, you saw the gut-grinding reality of this church that produced this ministry. Turn on the TV, come back another time. I'll be teaching as I always do. I'm going to close the service with one song. It's offering time again. I like to test the offering. Craig, I want you to do a Bible tour. You can meet back in the lobby for the guests that have come to see the Bibles. It's offering time. We'll see you next Sunday, and I'll be teaching next Sunday. Some of you will not be here, and there'll be some more people straightened out or moved out. I hope you understand I'm in business. I've been in this prison for 7 years. Thank God for my wife who has enabled me to get a grip finally on enough handles that nobody leaving can bring us down. This is a new beginning. You're going to follow me as I follow Christ, and we'll move on to victories. If you won't, you're going out, and I'll find those who will. Is that clear? Is that clear? Oh, I know you're afraid to clap because you got your money in your hands. Do we understand each other, folks? Good. Now sit down. It's offering time. I know you're as disappointed as I am that I can't teach this morning, and I've proven I can preach a 30-minute message, but not what I intend to do. Come back next Sunday and you'll get it. You'll get the message for today or whatever God plans. It's offering time. The song is If That Isn't Love. And the tour will convene in the back. I need the voices of faith at 6 o'clock tonight. You might hear a message in that 5 hours. Who knows? Be there at Voices of Faith. I'll see you next Sunday. This is the closing song. I'm sure that some people that I mentioned today are feeling sorry for themselves. If there's any good in them, I'm going to make one last remark. In eternity, they will stand responsible for what might have been accomplished with today's message if they had simply taken the gentle nudge, the gentle hint, and then the direct statement, "I want a report on what you're doing." Sir, your wife is doing something in this church. She's not doing it for you as her husband. I'm not interested in you giving me her reports. She's a preacher's daughter. She knows better. I want her to understand there's no independent ministry in this church. She owes reports to me. Now, I want her calling my wife's number, and I want to know the reports. And I want you to understand, you don't have an independent ministry. Now, I could give you some ministries that would say to you, my dearest friend, would you please? I think a child can understand what I was reaching out for. And had I gotten that respect and that recognition of the God-ordained authority of my office, they would not be benched. And this service would not have had to have this pastoral treatment. And I would have preached the message that I'd planned. I don't play games with you folks. I'll give a hint. I'll be nice. I'll tell you. But you had better understand from this day forward, I'm responsible for this congregation and every activity in it. And while I'm at it, there's a woman in this congregation that's been hitting on one or two of my staff guys. They're on camera. Now, I don't care what you do outside the church. I don't police your behavior. If you're a hooker part-time, keep it between you and God. I'm not judging you outside the church. But this old-timer understands that when a society takes over, you got to hand it to me. When it came time for Gene Scott to find a wife, I went outside the congregation. I didn't attack the women in my congregation. And look what God rewarded me with. I don't even care if my staff members are dumb enough to get caught by one of you women out in the streets. You leave your libido at home when you come as a voice of faith, and when you come to this church, this is not a dating game. And I'm just giving warning. You wait outside the studio to make a pass at one of my staff members. You use the work they're doing, and I'm not... Kissinger was right. The greatest aphrodisiac in the world is authority. There's a mini society, the staff people, I'm a pro at this. One woman I threw out of this church went through every single man she could find on my staff. You haven't got one of these goony bird pastors, doesn't know what's going on. I know exactly what all my parts are for, and they're still working, and I'm not some naive preacher that is discovering these facts about life. I want you to understand, don't try fooling me. Now, you marauding women, this one's been a faithful supporter for years. You zip up whatever element you have between your legs, and when you come to church, you leave it outside, and if you want to make passes on the men in this congregation, you do it off premises, you understand? I don't allow in-house flopping. Hold on. It's not a moral issue I'm making. You just ain't going to make it with my staff members on the job. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Good day, folks. It's been a nice day.